This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. Today, we have got something super cool that we just need to jump right into because our listeners never hear it, but we are always talking to our guests just before we start recording. And we were just talking about something so cool, we have got to get started.
This sounds so cool. What problem are we solving today?
How did marine fossils end up on dry land?
How did marine fossils end up on dry land? This sounds like a very interesting question. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
So our guest today is Gabriel Felipe Santos. He has a master's degree in geology and earth science, which he describes as, "I'm just a guy who loves dead animals," which we need to talk about. But he is currently the collections manager and outreach coordinator of the ALF Museum, which is going to be awesome to talk about. But not just that, he is also the co-founder of the Cosplay or Science Initiative. Wait until you hear about that.
Oh, this sounds so interesting. Welcome to the show, Gabriel.
Hello, thank you so much for having me today.
So I don't even know where to start, but let's start at the beginning. How did you get interested in rocks and fossils and to study geology? Where did that come from?
You know, for me, like I've always, when I was a kid, I really, really loved science. And I remember my parents taking me to the La Brea Tar Pits because I'm born and raised in Los Angeles.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's like my favorite. It was like my backyard museum. They would take me all the time.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just love science. Like I love learning about things. And so funny enough, I didn't always want to be a paleontologist, though. I just knew I loved science. So I actually went to school originally to be a doctor of medicine, but I realized that wasn't for me. I wasn't super happy doing that. And eventually I found my way to paleontology thanks to museums. I visited the American Museum of Natural History, and that museum is what inspired me to work in museums as a paleontologist. So that's how I got into where I am today. And you know, another thing is I loved telling stories when I was a kid, from like retelling Star Wars to my parents or giving dinosaurs story arcs or whatever.
That's
and that
awesome.
Kind of,
we love that. We love writing and telling stories.
It's so fun. And like, it's not, a lot of people don't realize it, but you can use stories with science because when we're talking about the story of life on Earth, it's just another kind of story. And so that's what I like to do as a paleontologist now, is tell the stories behind the fossils and the people.
That is very cool. So you said you were a paleontologist at a museum, and I announced it as the ALF Museum. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah. So here at the ALF Museum, we are a very special place. We are the only accredited museum on a high school campus, and we are named after our founder, Dr. Raymond ALF, who was a teacher here at the Webb Schools. And he started this really amazing program of bringing high school students out into the field, collecting fossils and doing research and learning about paleontology. And we've really evolved that program now. So we have our students actually doing real research and publishing papers, but we're also a public museum. So we have guests that come and visit and learn about all the amazing fossils that our students find.
Oh, that sounds so cool. And so this leads into the problem that you're solving, which is how did marine fossils end up on dry land? So have you guys investigated any of this with your students or?
This is actually my own personal research back when I was in my master's program and a little bit after. I studied marine mammals because for me, learning about mammals that went back into the water was such a cool story. And, you know, when you think about marine fossils, of course, you think about the ocean. You think, okay, they're probably by the beach or like anywhere there's water. But here in Southern California, we actually find a lot of fossils nowhere near the beach. We find them up in the hills, our mountains, our parking lots, when we're building freeways, and when we're building malls. This is where we find marine fossils. And when I was learning about geology, it was such a cool thing to learn about why we can find marine fossils so far away from the ocean.
That is super. Okay, so I just have to jump right in with, what is the coolest marine fossil that you know of that's been found far away from the ocean?
I'm going to cheat a little bit because there's two of them. And I've worked on both of them.
So, cool.
The first one I'll talk about is this really cool specimen. It's called Titanotaria orangensis. It is a fossil walrus, right? And it's not like a walrus that we think of today up in the Arctic, you know, with the long tusks and everything.
Right. Sure.
This walrus looked more like a sea lion, and it was found here in Southern California.
Wow.
Yeah, and I got to help describe that with another paleontologist, Isaac Magallanes, and our advisor, Dr. Jim Parham, and the curator at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County, Jorge Velez-Warbe. And there was this beautiful, almost complete fossil walrus that looked like a sea lion. Wow. And so it was amazing and beautiful. And it was found during a construction project. Excavator ran over its shoulder blade. That happens a lot here in California. And I could talk about that a little bit later. But when they ran over the shoulder blade, they're like, oh, we found a fossil. So here in California, we always have paleontologists at construction sites because we're always finding fossils at them.
Wow.
Okay.
And when the paleontologist said, stop, we found a fossil, they started removing some of the matrix. That's what we call the rock that surrounds fossils.
Right. Okay.
And they started removing it slowly, slowly. And eventually they found this beautiful walrus all curled up on itself, almost complete in the rock. And it was just so amazing and beautiful. And it ended up being a new genus of walruses from Southern California.
Oh my gosh. Kidding. Now, did you find the actual bones, or was it like an imprint fossil or something like that?
It was the actual fossilized bones of it. So, when bones fossilize, they're no longer the same organic material. So they actually are kind of an imprint of the original specimen. So they're the shape of bones, but they're mineralized. They're like rock. Okay. So we found the actual fossilized bones of this walrus all curled up in itself in the rock.
Wow. So goofy question. You always have a paleontologist at construction sites in California because you're always finding fossils there. I've never heard anybody in any other state ever say that. It sounds like all of the animals in the past loved California as much as all the people do now.
I mean, that's not that far off. A lot of really cool specimens have been found in California. The reason that we have so many great fossils is because back in the day, and this kind of answers the question of why we find lots of marine fossils here, is that Southern California in particular, in the Los Angeles Basin, it was a basin. So it's like this depression in the earth, right?
Okay.
And so over millions of years, that depression will fill with sediments, and that kind of forms these layers upon layers upon layers. And as animals die, they get buried in those layers and get stacked on top of each other. And that's why we have all these amazing fossils from so much period of time here in Southern California. And as part of that also, we had sea levels rise and fall in Southern California as well.
Right.
So that's why in some areas where it is now dry land, it used to be shallow sea. And there is also, of course, uplift, where some of these rocks, like layers of rocks, get pushed up higher where we have mountains now. And so that's why in the deserty mountains of Southern California, you can find whale fossils, walrus fossils, and my personal favorite, which is my other one, desmostylians, which you've probably never heard of.
Okay, now we have to ask, what are those?
So I love talking about desmostylians. They're my personal favorite fossil. And what they are, let's play imagination really quick. So if you close your eyes, you imagine yourself on the beach, and walking out of the water is this huge animal about the size of an elephant, but it looks like a hippo with a very long face. That is what a desmostylian is. They're they're these really derpy, weird, extinct group of marine mammals. And I love them so much.
Like with legs, they swim?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't have flippers or anything. They looked a lot like hippos in their body shape. And they lived in the North Pacific coast for a long time, up until about 10, 12 million years ago here in the Pacific coast. You can find them all the way from Baja, Mexico, up to Canada, Alaska, Russia, all the way down to Japan is where you can find these really, really weird marine mammals. And they have no descendants left today. They're all completely extinct.
Okay, I just Googled. I had to. The way you described it, my brain was not giving me a good enough picture. I had to Google a Desmostylian. What a cool looking animal.
Right? I love them so much. And they were actually the very first fossil I got to study as a paleontologist and my very first publication. I got to look at how Desmostylians change from very young baby all the way to grumpy, toothless adults.
Did you find complete fossils throughout the ages then?
Not me personally. I used to work at another museum where they had these really great fossils of Desmostylians. And so Desmostylian teeth are actually very, very common in the fossil record. They look like a bunch of sushi rolls all stuck together, actually. And it may be like hard to imagine, but if you look up a picture, you'll see what I mean. But okay. We find their teeth all the time. And so that's what Desmostylians are known for. Their name actually comes from their teeth. Desmos means bounded. And stylus means pillar. So they look like a bunch of bound pillars all stuck together. Okay. So that's where they get their name. Now, the old museum I used to work at, we had a specimen that was labeled Desmostylian, but it was completely toothless. And for a Desmostylian to not have teeth is really weird when they're known for their teeth. And so I got to go to other museums, look at other specimens and compare as many specimens as I could of different ages of the same species and figure out how Desmostylians change from very young baby with baby teeth to adults with adult teeth and how they lose their teeth as grumpy old individuals that probably chewed on very soft kelp.
That's what I was going to ask. What was their diet, do you know? Was it just kelp or did they eat other fish or whatever was it in the ocean back then?
We're still trying to figure that out. There's not much known about Desmostylians. The leading hypothesis based on the evidence we have, because we look at the teeth, some paleontologists have done really cool things called isotopic analysis, where we look at the very molecules of these teeth. And we hypothesize that Desmostylians were actually eating seagrasses because 15 million years ago, much of the Pacific was warmer and it had all these shallow seas for these beautiful seagrass beds, kind of like the prairies of North America, in the ocean.
Okay.
So Desmostylians were like these grazers in the water. Yeah. Isn't it cool? Like cows.
But they swam. I can't get over them swimming with, I mean, like big legs like hippos.
Yeah. That's how we think they look.
Wow.
We have actually really cool complete skeletons of Desmostylians. So we know how they look like, but we're not actually sure how they swam yet.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
So you just described your two favorites. Now I want to ask, are you still currently working on these animals and learning about them, doing research with them, or have you moved on to doing something else?
I've actually kind of moved on to doing something else. I still love Desmostylians. I love marine mammals with all my heart, but scientific research just isn't my path anymore. What I love to do now is I'd like to take the research that other paleontologists do and help tell those stories so everyone can enjoy paleontology as much as I love paleontology. And one of my favorite ways of doing that is by this thing that my friends and I created called Cosplay for Science, where we dress up as characters from all these really cool movies and comic books and talk about the science that inspired those, from things like Jurassic Park to Pokemon to even Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, there's so much science in all of those movies. In fact, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they're talking about how they learned so much about science and STEM from Pokemon. And someone was like, what? How is that possible? And I'm like, how do you not see it?
Right. Okay, so just jumping right into that. Can you give us an example right off the top of your head? Pick a movie and give us some science.
Yeah, actually, to kind of go back to the question that we were talking about earlier is how do we find marine fossils on dry land?
Right.
Well, one of the ways we do that in the real world is as geologists, we look at the types of rock that the fossils are found in, right?
Okay.
When we look for fossils, they're found in these types of rock called sedimentary rocks. Sedimentary rocks are basically made from older rocks that got broken down and eroded and piled up on top of each other and turned into a new kind of rock. So they're made up of lots of tiny rocks or bigger rocks. And every now and then, fossils are part of those sedimentary rocks. Now, for sedimentary rocks to form, they have to be somewhere with water. They have to be either in a river, the ocean, the sea, the deep ocean, because they need water to flow and push the sediments so that they can pile up on each other. So here on Earth, that's how we look for fossils. And that's how we know that we find oceanic fossils, because oceanic fossils or marine fossils are found in certain type of rocks that tell us it was once an ocean. Mm-hmm. Now, if we take that same concept and move it to the world of Star Wars, let's say Tatooine, right? Everyone who's seen Star Wars, you know Tatooine is this dry, hot desert planet. Not a great place for life, except for maybe Tusken Raiders. But there's no water. They have moisture farms so that they can get water.
Right.
But if you're watching Star Wars and you look at the canyons and all the areas where like R2-D2 and all of the characters are walking through, if you look at the rock actually has these very distinct layers in it with lots of little pebbles and big stones. So that tells us that's a sedimentary rock. So here on Earth, sedimentary rock form because of water. On Tatooine, to get sedimentary rock, there had to have been water at one point in the planet's history that's gone now and dried up. So that is how we can look at like science in Star Wars and look at even the history of a fake planet by looking at the geology from the movie and maybe reconstructing the story of how maybe millions and millions of years ago, Tatooine was once a planet full of life with water and plants that dried up and the climate change. And now it's this desert hot planet. So that's one way we can look at science from our Earth to a planet far, far away.
And that's exactly what space scientists are doing with studying Mars right now.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow. What a great story. Thank you.
I mean, that's where I was going to go, Jeff, because we had one of our engineers from NASA Jet Propulsion Lab who worked on Perseverance, and he worked on the drill, and now they're taking rock samples. And I believe that's probably what they're looking for in there. Correct? Is probably evidence, I'm guessing, of sediment.
I would think so. Or the like the different types of rocks that they find. I'm hoping that one day they'll need a paleontologist on Mars.
There you go.
And I will have my name on that list.
That would be amazing. Okay, so I want to talk about the high schoolers. So you said that you take them on digs, so they actually get to go on, you know, paleontological digs. Are there ones where they are, or do you take them places and find, or do they go hunting for them and not even know anything's there and look for things?
We actually have a really cool program for that because we're lucky here in Southern California. Like I said, we have tons of fossils everywhere. So not that far from our museum is this place called Barstow. And it's this really cool desert area with amazing fossils from 15 million years ago, from things like horses to ancient camels to even these weird things called bear dogs. And our students, we take them there to go looking for fossils. But we also go to places like Wyoming. We used to work in Utah. We go where the fossils are based on what our curator and director are researching. We can't just go anywhere we want because as a museum, as paleontologists, it's part of our duty to collect fossils responsibly. So what we have are permits from, you know, from the areas and the Bureau of Land Management and all the governing bodies that protect and monitor these places, because fossils, you know, they're very cool and I can understand why people love having them. But also these fossils are very important pieces of data and they're a limited resource as well. Sure. So we do our best to ethically and, you know, follow all the rules when we collect our fossils. So when we go anywhere, we always have a permit. That's not saying there aren't places out there where you can go and collect fossils for fun. If you go out somewhere like the Marble Mountains in California, you can collect invertebrate trilobites, tiny little cool, like roly-poly looking animals, and you can collect those without a permit.
And you can take them home? They're okay with that?
Yeah, you can only have a certain amount. And one of the things I always recommend to people is before you go looking for fossils, go online, look at what the laws are in your area to collect fossils. Like in Florida, it's okay to collect fossils out of the riverbed. It's totally fine. But here in California, we have different rules.
Well, then that's what I'm going to do one weekend. That would be fun. Am I going to find any of the big, huge ones? Like, do we have big fossils here in Florida?
Oh, yeah. Florida's got some amazing, amazing fossils out there. And just like in California, you can find marine fossils in dry land.
All right, that's it. That's a weekend trip. I'm going to have to do that. That'll be fun.
So it sounds like, and not that every listener or kid is always going to do this, but it sounds like you happen to take something that was, like you said, your parents used to visit the La Brea tar pits. You grew up in an area that was great for learning about paleontology and lots of fossils. But now you don't have to live there because you just said, Jen was just talking about Florida, and you know that there are lots of places, basically there are fossils all over the world. So you don't have to stay in one spot to do that thing you love.
No, fossils can be found in so many amazing places, and they don't always have to be like remote, desolate deserts. Like here in California, we're an urban city, you know, urban sprawl with lots of cities, and we find fossils out here. And so no matter where you are, there's a really good chance that there are fossils nearby for you to look at, learn about, and just really learn about the really cool past of these animals and places we'll never see with our own eyes. It like does amazing things to spark the imagination.
Oh, exactly. Okay, so I have a question. If I wanted to go looking for fossils, are there certain rocks? I mean, I know you said sedimentary, but if I'm just looking at it and I'm not able to, you know, see the whole cliff with all of the layers, do you look for certain mounds or do you look for certain rocks? Can any of that help me find a fossil? Do I just dig, right?
Yeah, you definitely want to look for specific kinds of rocks. So if you just start digging in your backyard, you're not going to be hitting rock. What you're digging is soil. That's the top layer of the Earth's crust. It's like organic matter, plant matter, like decaying stuff. What you need to do is go somewhere where you can find outcrops, which are where rocks are literally sticking out of the ground, eroding away, and you can see them. So that's why deserts are a great place to start. Or beach cliffs, even. Beach cliffs are really, really great places to see fossils, depending on where you are. And again, you want to look for rocks that are made up of other rocks. So they can be tiny sand grains that are all like lithified together, or they can even be big boulders that are all stuck together. You want to look for something that you can kind of break apart into smaller pieces.
Okay.
When you look at things like igneous rocks or metamorphic rocks, these are usually, they don't break apart as easily as sedimentary rocks, because one, igneous rocks are made from magma and lava, and anything that falls in magma or lava probably isn't going to fossilize.
Melt maybe, but not fossilize. Yeah.
Not really. Very, very rare.
I'm imagining listeners, because I have a 10-year-old who loves rocks, loves finding fossils. I live in Colorado, and in just our neighborhood, we have something called, that my daughter calls the Nature Hill. And it's an outcropping covered in trees and rocks and dirt. It's right next to our neighborhood. And her friends will occasionally find animal bones. And they will obviously be kids and pick them up and bring them home. And then we'll get them to wash their hands as quickly as we can. But they're deer bones or bird bones or squirrel or rabbit bones. You know, my 10-year-old's not the only one out there in the world doing this, but it also sounds like you have this really cool job where you get to go on a treasure hunt, like all the time to do your job.
Yeah, I would say I'm pretty lucky in that I get to go to some really cool places to find fossils and even talk about them. I've been very lucky in that I've been able to go to like Peru to look at whale fossils in the desert. Yeah, that was really cool. Getting to see just whale fossils just eroding out of the desert was one of the most amazing things. I got to go to Mongolia a couple of years ago to help talk about dinosaurs, which was really, really cool with the Institute for the Study of Mongolian Dinosaurs. I've been to Utah. I got to go to Japan to talk about some dinosaurs and help move a dinosaur to Japan or back from Japan. I've been very lucky in that I've been able to go and see all these places. And I think one thing about that too, and kind of what your story was with your kids collecting things, is as a geologist and as a paleontologist, we get to see these really cool connections of things, right? Like today, you know, when we look at the planet, everything's kind of separated out. We like to categorize things. We like to put things in boxes. Even our cities, our countries, we have borders and things like that. And when you're a geologist and paleontologist or biologist, whatever, as a scientist, and you get to travel and see the similarities and make connections, you get to see just how connected everything is. Yes. Where now we've got cities, not that long ago, it was forests or desert or plains. And not before that, all those environments have changed over the millions of years. Like I said, here in California, we've gone from rainforest to shallow sea, to plains, to desert, to city, to however it is today and however it may be in the future. And through all of that, we've seen tons of different creatures come and go, evolve into other things, and just realize how amazing the story of life on Earth is and how connected we all really are to our planet.
And that's amazing and wonderful. And that's why we love to have guests like you on our show, because you can absolutely tell your passion for what you do comes forward. And we hope kids, you know, of all ages that are listening to this podcast, follow their passions for whatever they're doing. Of course, we could talk to you for hours, especially about the cosplay thing, by the way. But we wanted to know if you have a challenge for our listeners.
Absolutely, I do. I'm really excited to share this challenge. And it kind of goes back to what I was just saying. Everything on our planet is connected, even though we may not realize it. So for all the listeners out there, what I would love for you to try to do is get a journal and go outside in your backyard, go into a park somewhere, you know, somewhere where you can kind of see just a little bit of nature and make observations of how things are connected. Look at, let's say, you in your backyard, look at what kind of plants you have, and maybe try to find what kinds of birds or animals are going to eat those plants, or even look at how the plants are even interacting with each other. At the park, look at how humans have kind of made a park by the kinds of plants they use. How do plants kind of change the environment around them? Like, you've seen trees lift up the sidewalk so that they can grow their roots.
Yes.
Right? So look at the way that things are all connected and make observations of these connections.
I like that. Because you need nothing except your eyes and maybe a notepad and a pencil.
Your curiosity. You need your curiosity.
And a little bit of imagination.
And a little bit of imagination. Yes.
I can't wait to see what our listeners will post for us as a comment, or maybe share on our social media about what's in their neighborhoods.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. This has been a fabulous episode. Thank you so much for being on Solve for Kids, Gabriel.
That was my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Wow, wasn't that fun? Talking to Gabriel wasn't just entertaining, it was educational. I learned some stuff, and I am definitely going to be telling my daughter, who loves rocks and fossils, about desmostylians.
Yes, I think that's cool. And I am going to do what he said. I'm going to start digging for fossils in here around Florida, because this sounds like so much fun. And I hope some of our young listeners do too. And if you want to see a picture of Desmostylian, if I said that right, make sure you go to our website, solveitforkids.com, because we'll have pictures. And Gabriel said he'd even send us some pictures of him with the fossil.
Super cool. That is going to be a great page. Don't forget, we have comments activated on our web pages now for each individual episode. So after you listen to an episode, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, and share with us on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, @KidsSolve.
And this week's book that's a giveaway, if you comment, is my very own Rocks, Fossils, and Shells Outdoor School Book. I'm so excited, so I hope someone leaves a comment so we can give away a copy of that, and then you can have the guide to go out and hunt your own fossils.
My 10-year-old daughter's copy of that book is dirty, and it comes inside every night because she reads about a different rock, shell, or fossil every night before bed.
That's so awesome. Okay, so everybody go outside and look for fossils and shells and rocks and enjoy the outdoors. And we will see you next week on
Solve It for Kids.